We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting spotted on the BBC News website, read by Charlotte Green.
Following two security alerts, a bag in central London has been destroyed in a controlled explosion. Police said the bag is no longer deemed suspicious.
Now, thanks to Daniel Rich for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Amanda Iannucci and Bridget Christie. And opposite them on my left, Will Smith and Jeremy Hardy. Amanda, who's put his hush puppies in his mouth this week? Although, obviously, it's not as serious as some other hush puppy-related crimes.
Right, here we go then, straight in. You've given me the Kenneth Clark question. This is the danger. On this light-hearted, wry yes. look at the week's news, you expect me to be light-hearted and wry about a man who was light-hearted and wry about a thing that you shouldn't be light-hearted and wry about and who was then strung up by his feet and told to go on television on the hour, every hour, and eat his own mess.
Quite a tricky thing. There's a lot of it in the news, isn't there?
What a week it's been for non-consensual sex.
Yes.
Who'd have thought? It's the silly season.
It's not a good start to the show, really, is it? Next up, a lighter look at genocide.
But I actually felt a little bit sorry for him yesterday afternoon, because I think Ken Clark's OK, until I saw him on the 10 o'clock news coming out of his house in black tie, getting into a chauffeur-driven car. He looked at all the camera crews and he went, oh, trust me to say something like that on a day I'm going out for dinner. What am I like? As if he'd been inconvenienced by rape. I wish I was a waitress at that dinner and I'd have shoved his toad in the hole right down his throat and then said, oh, didn't you want it? You look like you did. It's hard to tell sometimes, isn't it?
I love the idea of Ken Clark going to a dinner where they serve toad in the hole.
Well, the government, they're trying to think, what can we... It looked too much if he resigned, so maybe we should just gradually ease him out and perhaps, you know, if he announces he's retiring to take on the new role of the vacated chair of the IMF... Oh, no, that doesn't work either, does it?
It must have surprised them too, though, because I'm sure the Tories thought they had consolidated all their gaffes into one easy Boris Johnson.
You say he's easy, but that's no excuse.
Moment there, you thought, surely this can't be true. Cigars smoking, jazz loving, hush puppy wearing Ken Clark, out of touch with the modern world? What an extraordinary.
He's basically just incapable of communicating with human beings. He actually said, in this interview, he said, well, if you and I are talking about rape in the normal conversational sense,
what?
What kind of. What kind of amiable chat involves that?
But isn't that partly the problem he's got, is that his tone is genial. So, I was just wincing, because every time he said the word rape, with his tone, it's just wrong. It's like talking about it with the same tone he'd used to talk about mild disappointment at the latest Jamie Cullum album. It just felt...
Justice Secretary Ken Clark was forced to apologise after appearing to suggest some rapes were less serious than others on Radio 5 Live. Ed Miliband called for him to be sacked, thereby gallantly taking away all chance of him ever leaving office. 2 points to Armando. Bridget, who has come up against some difficulties in his plans to renovate the House?
This is Nick Clegg's plans to reform the House of Lords. He wants peers to be democratically elected rather than appointed. He must be respected for carrying on, really, I think, Nick Clegg.
Do you feel sorry for him?
I did, yeah. But I don't think I do it anymore, because I think he just needs to sort of stop.
Clegg must be the only person, when he's writing out his speeches, has to put pause for derisive laughter.
The trouble is there are too many of them now, the House of Lords. Because it used to be sort of a hereditary disorder, basically, the House of Lords. And whenever they got to be too many of them, they just turned the heating off for a couple of days. And there would be a natural wastage thing. But the trouble is that now they keep creating peers using offcuts of sportsmen and scientists and yes. MPs who've lost their seats.
I didn't understand. Under the new measures, the chamber would be 80% elected. where are they going to get the other 20% from? Is it going to be It's a Knockout? Which are they going to be...
No. You do it like a talent contest.
But you can't let the people... Because you end up with people like Wagner.
Do you mean the composer?
No, not me. Yeah, the composer, Wagner, was really good on X Factor.
And has an interesting transport policy.
But the elected bit will be different... Because the thing is, the trouble is, it will be more proportional than the House... It will be, in a way, more legitimate than the House of Commons, because it will be proportional, because it's going to be elected by the STV, which is the sexually transmitted vote.
But all three parties have said they want this, but they're now all kind of booing him because it's Clegg.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's so
busted. Unpopular.
He could rescue a child from a burning building and we'd all just go, oh, you had to steal the thunder from the firemen, didn't you? You're showing it's the big society, we don't need them, you turd. Lost it.
Can't go to any party now. It's like a children's entertainer who's turned up at a pirate's party with a sack full of homework. And then charged the parents £9,000 for it.
He says foolish things. He said, surely at the end of the day, we can all agree that 80% is better than no percent. And I thought, well, not if the question is it a boy? Nick Clegg's...
Or how much excrement would you like in your face?
Nick Clegg's post-referendum fight back got off to a shaky start as his plans for a reformed House of Lords were mocked by Tory and Labour peers and MPs. Under new proposals, the current 750-member House of Lords would be reduced by a third, most of which probably done through exercise and a sensible diet. In addition, 14 of the 26 bishops would have to move out of the Lords. Diagonally, presumably, I would imagine. 2 points to Bridget. Will, who's had a right royal Republican welcome this week?
That would be the Queen, who has visited Ireland. First time in 100 years, I think, that a British monarch has visited Ireland. Obviously, she couldn't go before because of the troubles with her husband and the threats to peace posed by his mouth. But I think they put a Hannibal Lecter face mask on him and strapped into a gurney, and it's all gone pretty swimmingly.
Did you like her? Does anybody speak the language?
She spoke Irish.
She did.
And Mary McAleese, the president, you could see her saying, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it, but it was probably, hello, Paddy, thanks for all the free labour.
But nobody pointed out that when she said wow under her breath, that is actually Gaelic for patronising git.
Did you see they poured the Queen a pint of Guinness? And she didn't go for it at all, but the Duke was stood behind her and he sort of lunged towards it and then stopped suddenly. I think it was the colour put him off.
She did arrive dressed head to toe in green, which is such a subtle. She might as well have done bloody river dance.
She did look like a drunken American on St Patrick's Day, didn't she? She should have just had the big green floppy hat and the plastic shillelagh, shouldn't she?
And the chin-strap beard.
This is the first time, isn't it, that a British monarch has visited Ireland since 1911. Oh, she was right to wait, though, because the prices have come right down. This week, the Queen visited Ireland and apologised, sort of, for those who have suffered as a consequence of our troubled past. Her Majesty displayed cultural sensitivity by arriving in Ireland dressed in green, while Prince Philip wore a bowler hat and an orange sash. The new relationship between the two countries, the Queen released Terry Wogan back into the wild. 2 points to Will. Jeremy, who doesn't give a fox about spending abroad?
Oh, this is Foxy, Dr. Fox, little Liam. To make up for the spending cuts, on Sunday he announced this military covenant thing that will be enshrined in law. The line is, if the government is prepared to send young people to be maimed in pointless and unwinnable wars, then it has a duty of care to them. Now, audience, can you see what's wrong with that sentence? Okay. But because he'd said this and he's all pleased, the army will be pleased with him, then he's upset, and it's leaked in a letter, that the next day the government announces that they're going to assign 0.7% of national income to foreign aid. And Liam's thinking, well, what's the point in feeding foreigners when we'll probably end up killing them anyway? So he's all angry about that. And then later in the week, he's got to defend the defence cuts to the army. And so he's in this horrible position. And he basically was defending the defence cuts by saying, well, you know, it's no good. We've got to cut the deficit. You can have all the body armour you want, but if you've got poor credit rating, it's no use to you. Yeah.
But we should help other countries, shouldn't we? In Denmark, we're very keen on helping developing nations. Why do you think I'm here?
He is going to go nuts. He is a hormonal adolescent militarist, really. He is going to go nuts. He's going to turn into John Rambo in First Blood at some point. He said something like, we need to be able to launch a nuclear missile from a submarine anywhere in the world. And I thought, what an aspiration that is for a human being to have. What would you like to do in life? What would be your aspiration? Imagine if a Miss World contestant was asked that. Instead of travel the world and work with disabled children, I'd like to be able to blow the world to merry flip.
Is he making a bid, do you think, to one day be leader? Because he stood before, didn't he, 2005? I think he finished third behind David Cameron and, I don't know, compare the market meerkat. I don't know who it was the other one.
But Fox, it's either he's leaking letters or he says somebody else is leaking letters that he sends to Cameron. But it's this strange formality. I quite like the fact they're sort of writing letters rather than conversations or emails. It's like they're, you know, a married couple stuck in a loveless marriage and neither of them is willing to leave the house, so they're just sticking it out and leaving really horrible post-it notes everywhere, like, put your shoes outside the back door, they stink, tell your whore mistress to bring her own toilet paper, that sort of thing.
Defence Secretary Liam Fox has opposed plans to increase Britain's overseas budget, saying that the money should be spent on defence. Charities defended the aid spending, saying that millions of children were alive in the third world due to Britain's help and that anything we spend on aid we can make back on cheap trainers. 2 points to Jeremy at the end of round one. The scores are Armando and Bridget have got 4 points, but so too have Will and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Daily Mail.
A serial burglar who's obsessed with cleanliness has walked free from court after telling the judge he would find jail too dirty. Admitting to previous offences, his solicitor said he now wanted to wipe the slate clean.
Thanks to Mrs. Kipplewhite from Essex for sending us that. Armando, who's hoping a speedy investigation will clear his name?
This is another politician, the details of whose story I'm not allowed to go into in great detail because it might be the target and subject of a potentially criminal investigation.
But it isn't at the moment, so
it
we're
isn't
okay.
At the moment. Oh, well, in that case, Chris Hune asked his wife to take points for speeding.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. And although it's not been proven and nobody knows quite what's happened, whenever Chris Hune stood up in the House of Commons, people were asking him questions like, would the minister full speed ahead like to, like little children?
Perhaps Chris Hune just applied AV to his speeding points and his wife was his first preference.
It's not very serious, is it? I mean, the police, people keep saying, few people realise what a serious crime this is and you can go to prison. You think, yeah, but it's like when you get a video, when they used to have videos, and it would say, video piracy is a crime, and you'd think, yeah, but not really, is it? This Bluebeard wouldn't have gone, keep filming,
I once got a letter, well, my partner and I got a letter about speeding points, and we genuinely couldn't remember, OK, who had been driving. So she had...
Because you were both so drunk.
Yeah. But the thing that they keep saying is, how could this woman, Vicky Price, his ex-wife, how could she have been driving to Stansted to pick him up when she was having dinner with 12 respected economists? And there's a simple answer, KFC drive-thru. Alan Greenspan, family bucket, I think you're fine. I think I quite like this. A senior Lib Dem warned Hune that sharks within the party were circling. Lib Dem sharks, those are the ones that get beaten up by plankton.
It is very Lib Dem as well, isn't it? It's a bit tawdry and a bit, you know, I mean, at least for the Tories, when they go down, it's something, you know, it's like having sex dressed as Darth Vader or hanging a poacher on a silver scaffold they've claimed on expenses. For a speeding point, you just think, oh, liven it up.
I know.
I mean, don't go the full Berlusconi, but, you know, do something.
It reminds me of the time that Ming Campbell was pulled over for driving his jalopy without goggles. I remember that. That was...
I think the lesson is, don't start a divorce when you're just about to go into government. I mean, you're going to be busy anyway, you won't see her, so that's fine. And maybe your hectic work schedule will push her into an affair and you can take the moral high ground.
Yeah,
whereas, you know, save your affairs for your retirement. That's the lesson.
Have you put that on a post-it note in your house?
I hope my wife is listening.
Chris Hune has contacted Essex Police to help with their investigation into whether he passed points incurred for speeding in 2003 onto his then-wife, Vicky Price. Until the matter is resolved, Chris Hune's driving licence remains pointless, rather like his role as Energy Secretary. Last year, Chris Hune left his wife for his former press secretary, who was in a civil partnership with another woman. It's like a Dear Deirdre photo story, isn't it? Will, whose leave has been extended even farther?
Dad's. This is Vince Cable's idea to extend paternity leave. If your partner takes time off, you can get up to 5 months. But some organisations are saying they don't think fathers will use this kind of time because of the stigma attached to men who want to spend time with their families. Which, well, you can understand that. If you run an organisation that needs to be devoid of any empathy or fellow feeling, like an arms company or News Corp, you don't want some kind of sap who wants to take time off to spend time with his partner during those first difficult few weeks of parenthood. You want someone like Kelvin McKenzie or Dick Cheney with a heart of coal, who, you know, just hears laughter as the death rattle in the throat of a fool and sees tears as tiny weapons you can use to drown your enemies. So I find it a bit strange that people think they won't use it, because I think it would be absolutely fantastic.
But parenthood doesn't have to hold your career back. Look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's absolutely fine.
I think it's harder to stay at home.
Do you?
With the children than go out to work. I do, actually. Yes, I do. Don't clap. It's much harder to stay at home. I think so. Yeah. Unless you've got a really hard, difficult job, then it's not.
Is the other reason that men won't take up the paternity leave that actually quite a lot of them don't particularly want to spend a lot of time at home?
You're breaking the code.
A puking, a moaning, wailing, puking goblin. Mm. And would rather go to work and, you know, speak to clients and have lunch than be...
And play squash.
Be up to their elbow in sort of yellow liquid.
Also, I think Britain is just not a really family-friendly country? I went to visit a friend who'd given birth, and there was a sign on the door at the maternity ward said, no children after 6 p.m, and I just... Vince Cable has announced plans to give fathers up to 5.5 months of paternity leave and to allow partners to share 7 months between them. The business secretary said that the government is doing as much as it can to give fathers time with their children through expanded, flexible paternity leave and massive unemployment. 2 points to Will. Jeremy, don't take this personally, but just how long have you got to live?
Oh, in Spain, they've found out by measuring your telomeres, I don't know if that's how you say it, telomeres, which is a kind of paella, by measuring that, they can tell you how long you're going to live, which, well, there's a plus and a minus to that. On the one hand, it's quite good to know roughly when you're going to die. Not too specifically, but roughly. Certainly in the latter stages, you can make preparations. Like, because you know those magazine articles, like 10 things to do before you die. And it's never things like come to terms with the fact that you're going to die. It's just go to Florence and watch the Godfather trilogy. On the other hand, the danger is that if we find out how long we've got, insurance companies will find out how long we've got, and then nobody will be able to get any insurance at all. Because you'll say, does this cover frozen food spoilage in the event of a power cut? What's the point in that? You'll be dead in 30 years. You can eat all that fish fingers you like. You're still going to have a massive coronary on your 80th birthday.
Isn't there already a machine that will tell you roughly how long you've got to live? Called a mirror.
Hospitals would invest in scanners if it really was that easy.
Broadly speaking, I mean, I know it might be more helpful in some cases with cosmetic surgery now, it's harder to tell. Like with Anne Robinson, well, she has got that weird sort of face of a 24-year-old, but the demeanour of a medieval Central Asian warlord.
The thing is, would you want them to tell you? And how do they let you know when you're going to die? Because that's going to be a bit grim when you get your results through, like when they ring up and they say, Mr. Hardy, I have the results of your death test. So, well, don't you normally send a letter? There isn't time for that.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Apparently, we'll all be dead by Saturday. Have you seen this?
The rapture.
What's that?
All the good people by Saturday will go up to heaven.
Is it the end of days?
Where's this written down? How the word this out?
The Reverend Harold Camping. who's 89, who says his family don't speak to him because they think he's nuts. And so we're all going to be dead by Saturday.
It's just him. It's just his theory.
Yeah, actually, if you're listening to the repeat, you didn't make it to heaven. Yeah. A new DNA test which predicts how long you will live will go on sale in Britain at the end of the year. The test measures the length of your telomeres, which are the regions of repetitive DNA sequences protecting the ends of the chromosomes from deterioration or from fusion with neighbouring chromosomes, if I remember correctly.
See, I'm ready for death now, at the end of that sentence. I lost the will to live halfway through that.
That's good, because I had you tested without you knowing. I'm not going to tell you the results, but if there's anything else you want to say, hurry up. At the end of round two, the scores are Will and Jeremy have got 8 points, but Amanda and Bridget have gone into the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the Sunday Times.
Three Muslim clerics were barred from a flight after the pilot claimed some of the passengers might be uncomfortable with their presence. All three were en route to a conference entitled Islamophobia, Diagnosis and Treatment.
And our thanks to John Sampson for sending us that. Bridget, what flaming journey is going to take 70 days?
The Olympic torch.
2 points.
They have revealed the route the torch is going to take. And it's starting at Land's End. It's going to go all the way through Cornwall, through Wales. It's going to get an aeroplane to Ireland. And I saw Lord Coe talking about this morning, and the interviewer said, but it has to remain lit when it's in the aeroplane. How are you going to do that? And he said, oh, we've got these scientists and inventors looking into it, and they've invented this thing that goes around the torch as it's going over, but that's a hot air balloon, isn't it?
I can't take a bottle of water on an aeroplane.
No,
but it's a health and safety nightmare. We've got this plane thing, and then they're going to traipse this torch around a tinder-dry countryside with 8,000 butterfingered children. It's a hideous thought.
No, what they're not going to do that this time, because Lord Coe and Cameron have talked about it together. They want the community to be a lot more involved, all the big society, all that nonsense. So what they're having is just a really, really, really long line of shackled prisoners just passing it to each other.
That's a nice idea.
Except for the ones who pleaded guilty, they're going to get tickets.
I mean, who's going to turn out? Is anyone really... I mean, are people that wowed by the sight of fire anymore? I mean, it just...
Well, you wait till it goes to East Anglia. It'll be...
UFO.
It'll be the biggest thing since they opened the post office there.
The route apparently has been designed so that the flame is never more than a one-hour journey from 95% of the population.
Why don't they just... No one cares.
No, but why don't they just sellotape it to the back of a rat? You are... You're never more than 4 foot from a rat. The route of the Olympic torch's 70-day, 8,000-mile journey around the UK has been announced. Lord Coe said, the flame will shine a light across the nation's regions. I think he makes it sound like a humiliating medical procedure. The torch will travel to the Olympic Stadium via Land's End and the Orkneys, following the route that London cabbies will use to take Olympic tourists around the capital. 2 points to Bridget. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, which animal just couldn't be trained?
It's the Pony Express. There's a man in Wrexham in North Wales. It does sound at the beginning of a joke, this. A man in North Wales tries to take a pony onto a train, except they don't let him, so it stops there. But, yeah, he turned up, and he was trying to take it to hospital. That's the brain. He says, you're mad. What were you trying to get it on the train for? Well, I was trying to take it to hospital, wasn't I?
And, why did you take it to a hospital?
Was it a little horse?
Because... Actually, it was a
Work
pony.
With me, people.
He must have been doing it regularly, because when they turned him, he was quite indignant, and he said, well, nothing like this has ever happened before.
Correct.
As if he does it once a week and no one...
Did this... Because I saw a photo of the horse getting onto the train, so presumably the guy at the ticket office saw a guy with a horse.
Yeah, he said no.
But at some point must have given him the ticket, then.
No, he just took it up in the lift and was going to board without a ticket.
Oh.
And no rail card for the horse.
Why didn't he ride it to the hospital?
Why did he ride it to
hospital?
Why did he ride it to the hospital?
It might have been lame. Maybe that's why it was going.
Then boil it down for glue.
Sell it to the French.
CCTV footage has been released of a man trying to board a train in Wrexham with a pony. It's since been discovered that he also took the animal into Wrexham Hospital's A&E. The man then later took the pony into a bar. The barman said, "Why the long face?" He said, "Because they won't let me take my horse on the train." 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Yenucci.
This is a cutting sent in by Thomas Stinton from the village of yahoo.co.uk. It's an ad from the Helston Advertiser, personal ad from the Helston Advertiser, offering complete set of Encyclopedia Britannica, 45 volumes, excellent condition, £200 or best offer. No longer needed, got married, wife knows everything.
Ms. Christie.
Well, this is a lovely story from the Whitehaven News, more of an apology, really. We wish to point out, at the request of Mr. Alan Orr, that our report of his court case should have read that he threatened to bite the face of his brother, not bite off the face of his mother, as we reported. We are happy to clarify matters.
Mr. Smith.
This is a correction printed in the Sunday Times. It was sent in by John Sampson. It says, in last week's magazine, we stated that Sebastian Coe's father had called him an idiot after he had lost the 1,500 metres to Steve Ovett at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. In fact, it was after he had lost the 800 metres at the Moscow Olympics in 1980. We apologise for the error.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Brian Scholar of Ilford in Essex, and it's from The Telegraph. The headline, rising copper thefts are a police priority. A record surge in copper thefts poses such a threat to Britain's infrastructure that it is deemed the second highest priority after terrorism, police have warned.
Let's take a look at the final score. Will and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Armando and Bridget with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the personal ads section of the Redland Times, sent in by Peter and Sheila Bidgood.
Overweight 56-year-old male wishes to meet slim lady with boat. Please send photo of boat.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Armando Iannucci, Bridget Christie, Will Smith and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Rodri Crooks, Simon Littlefield and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Andy Walton and Benjamin Partridge. The producer was Sam Bryant.
The digital station for comedy, drama and entertainment. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Oh, hello, I'm Sandy Toksvig, and this is the News Quiz Extra. I don't know if you can tell, there's a slight echo in here, and that is because we're actually not coming to you from the stationery cupboard, which is good, but we are, in fact, coming to you from the disabled toilets, which is not so good. You see, what happened is the rest of the comedy department realised that the stationery cupboard was actually a viable recording venue, and so they've... Well, that's very annoying. They've block-booked it out for the whole of the next series of Just a Minute. Anyway, it turns out there have been some office reshuffles. You may have seen in the papers about the BBC moving everybody up to Salford and then back again and so on. And so we're time-sharing with the shipping forecast. In fact, if I just open the door, you can hear them warming up for their next bulletin.
Man overboard!
Anyway, coming up later on today's show, we'll be looking back into the news quiz archive. I'll be talking to Armando Iannucci, the most famous Scots-Italian since Giovanni McTavish, the inventor of championship-battered ice cream tossers. So,
hi, Sandy. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, Charlotte Green.
I've got a bit of a problem. Yeah. I haven't done the shipping forecast for about 10 years now, but for some reason, I've been left to do it.
Oh.
The computer's got some toilet duck in it, and it started making fizzing noises.
Oh.
And now I can't access my script. I don't know what to do.
Well, you just say, medium becoming good.
Yeah, but what if it's wrong?
No, the thing is, Darren, nobody understands the shipping forecast. Not even sailors. I mean, do you imagine that they're listening to Radio 4 on an oil rig? They're watching Top Gear videos and greasing their crankshafts.
Yes, I suppose you're right. All right, I'll probably just say that then.
Yeah.
What harm can it do?
No.
Anyway, look, I'll let you get on.
Yeah.
See you in a bit.
Okay, you've got a bit, tiny bit of toilet paper on the bottom of your shoe. Okay. Now, on the Radio 4 broadcast, we can't include everything that happens at the news quiz recording. Sometimes that's because some of the things that are said don't so much offend common decency as pick it up, rough it up a bit and throw it out of the window. But mostly it's because there's too much good stuff to fit into half an hour. So here are some of the bits you didn't hear on Radio 4. Armando, which country is in pole position?
This will be Denmark. This will be, you say, pointed to yourself. This will be Denmark. Denmark is, for the listeners at home, Sandy is performing a small victory dance.
There's no need to say small.
Yep. Well, Denmark is claiming to own the North Pole.
Yeah.
And if it does, if it succeeds, it will then be probably bigger than Russia.
Do you mean claiming?
Yes.
Obviously, we own the North Pole. It's the home of Santa's elves. I'm 5 foot tall. Case closed. You don't think we should own it?
Do you know, the thought of who owns the North Pole until today has never entered my head.
But it's important because Russia and Canada are going mental. Because Russia and Canada are thinking, well, the great thing is, as the ice cap melts, owing to global warming, we'll be able to get more oil and minerals from underneath and more gas. And I think you really don't get climate change, no. Do you? You're standing on the banks of an erupting volcano, on the slopes there of a volcano, thinking, oh, pumice. Don't the Lapps own it?
No, it's Danish.
Greenland.
Where do the Lapps live, then?
Northern Finland.
Do they have a lot of Lap dancing clubs there?
Do you know, I took the children there once because they had a Father Christmas thing on, and at the airport I made them all buy sunglasses because I was worried about, you know, going up to the very North Pole there. Anyway, it was the time of the 24-hour darkness. We turned up, completely missed the reindeer that had come to collect us.
So, Sandy, are you going to take on Russia in this scrap over there?
Yes, with Russia, Canada, settle it in a traditional way. Husky race.
So basically, we put you, Vladimir Putin, and Donald Sutherland in a ring, armed with knives, and whoever comes out alive gets the oil and gas rights to the North Pole.
Denmark.
I only said you because I can't think of a single other famous Danish person.
Hans Christian Andersen.
He
Victor
dead.
Victor Borge.
Victor Borge, he was funny.
He's dead.
Funny. He is dead.
He's dead. They all die.
They're all dead, Sandy.
Life expectancy.
The only living Dane.
Or they all will be dead by Saturday.
Do you know, I haven't spoken to anybody in Denmark for weeks. I just wonder. Denmark is planning to lay claim to the North Pole and all its untapped mineral reserves by proving that the Arctic is geologically linked to Greenland, which is part of Denmark, obviously. Denmark, Russia, Canada, the US and Norway are all preparing to claim the frozen north, but Britain hasn't put a bid in because it already has Scotland. The Arctic is, of course, much easier to get to now thanks to climate change and EasyJet's new Southampton airport. 2 points to Armando. Bridget, who's decided the best way with boys is to cut a long story short?
Right. Teachers are giving up giving boys long novels to read because apparently when they get to page 100, they pass out and they can't get beyond 100 pages. So teachers are giving up teaching boys how to read long novels. But why don't they just divide the same book into three sections and call it a trilogy like Tolkien did? Because lots of boys read that.
See, I couldn't do that. I feel guilty if I don't finish a book. I mean, not everybody feels like that. Martin Amis, for example, if he can't be bothered to finish, he sends it to a publisher anyway, but
the best way to get a man to read, I think, is to put a book in front of him and then start to tell him something that's really important that he's supposed to remember. And then he'll say, no, I am listening. Yeah.
According to this study, 9% only of boys said that their favourite subject was English, and the other 98% said they preferred maths. If they don't want to read a book, Bridget, right, that's 200 pages long, I've got a solution to this.
What?
Wider pages and smaller font. A study by publishers Pearson has found teachers are giving up trying to make boys read long novels. There are fears we're heading towards a national catastrophe with a generation who can't finish reading anything, although the people who write credit card terms and conditions are delighted. Just 1 in 10 boys aged 11 to 14 put English down as their favourite school subject, although to be fair, we can't be sure the other 9 understood the question. 2 points to Bridget. Will, where has the fruit harvest gone with a bang?
This is China. Yeah. There was a farmer who, he added some kind of growth hormone to his watermelons, but he either got the amount wrong or right. I think he added it too late in the growth period and it was too wet or something, and they all exploded. But I think it's great. I'm sure we all want to try that now. It would certainly liven up Gardener's World. You thought that any moment, you know, something could explode and shower Monty Don with shrapnel-like pips.
I wanted to find out more about this story, so I put into Google exploding Chinese melons, and you wouldn't believe...
These watermelons smaller than all the other types of watermelons?
No, apparently.
Because I've never looked at a watermelon and thought, do you know what, I'm going to need another 3. raisins or grapes.
Yeah, no, Chinese watermelons, apparently, they've got very thin skin. Honestly, the slightest criticism, they flounce out.
But also, the farmer said, didn't he, that he's having nightmares about seeing them explode.
Traumatised. Said he can't get the images out of his mind, or presumably the pips out of his hair.
I have much worse nightmares than...
Do you?
Yeah.
Than exploding fruit?
Really bad stuff.
Like what?
Well, you know, like bananas walking around and... No.
What's the worst thing you've done in a dream? Have you made someone else take your points for you?
In eastern China, fields of watermelons have been exploding after farmers incorrectly applied a growth accelerator. The melons were injected with a stimulant for chlorofenuron, which apparently encourages rapid growth. Sorry, just talk amongst yourselves. I'm just going to copy that name down.
Terrible if you exploded, though, wouldn't it?
That would be a nightmare. Yeah.
Hell of an end to a show, though.
It would be.
Having made an Oscar-nominated film, Amanda Iannucci is officially our most successful news quiz panellist, knocking Andy Hamilton's 100-metre front crawl and Jeremy's cycling proficiency badge, frankly, into a cocked hat. You used to produce the show when? Late 80s,
yes. Yeah. During the breakup of the Soviet Empire.
That was entirely down to the news quiz, presumably.
That was, it happened practically on air.
Are you the only person who's both produced and appeared?
The legendary producer, Harry Thompson, I think, stood in for someone at the very last minute because he always got old panellists on, and every now and then there'd be a call saying, oh, you can't get out of bed, Harry.
The first time you were on the panel, was it weird? I mean, it's like the first time I went from panellist to host. Yeah, it was very strange. Were you sort of pooch-a-turn gamekeeper?
Yes, it was very strange and very scary. And also I was next to Alan Corrin,
which is
scary in itself. And also I found myself, much as I did as a producer, just sitting listening to him because he was very amusing and then forgetting that I ought to say something.
How has the show changed, do you think, since those days? Obviously, we're not breaking up empires. That would be one change. But how else has it changed?
We used to have more journalists on at that time, but frankly, I found them a little bit boring. So I'm rather pleased that we've got rid of them.
Who have you enjoyed appearing along?
I mentioned Anna Corrin, and I did, as a producer, I did get Peter Cook on a couple of times, and that was great to see him in action, because we got him on, as luck would have it, in a week when there was a tremendous court case where a judge did a terrible summing up and something dreadful happened, and we weren't allowed to say something. And so he just launched into this great judge impression of trying to say something but without saying what it was.
Genius.
And it just became a Peter Cook routine, and it was fantastic to watch.
Do you still feel you have to prepare for the show?
Do you know what? And I think you'll probably find this out from
You've
the recording.
You've not read
I sort of read the papers, but I've actually found that over the years of doing it that actually the key thing is to listen and not try and crowbar in any material you have, but actually respond to what's going on, because actually the funniest stuff that stays in is the funniest stuff that came after everyone got.
And it's usually nothing to do with the news at all.
No.
Any stories from this week's news that you are hoping will come up?
Well, really, that you're hoping won't. That might be the other question.
I'm rather hoping, but probably the BBC being what it is, it probably won't come up. But the vast sums of money the BBC has spent on bringing over a migration consultant from Kentucky to advise BBC employees on how to move to Manchester.
I don't know what migrates in Kentucky. Turkeys, maybe.
Point out all the watering holes.
Yeah, that would have been good. What else are you up to at the minute?
I'm in the middle of doing a documentary about Charles Dickens for the Dickens season. It's the bicentenary next year, 2012. So I'm doing a documentary of that, and then I'm about to do a comedy for HBO set in Washington, set in the Vice President's office.
Looking through the news quiz archive is always good fun. The good thing about doing this with a radio programme is that you get all of the lovely nostalgia without any of the indignity of being faced with your old hairstyles or shoulder pad-filled jackets. Earlier on, Mr. Hardy and I sat down with a piping hot cup of Bovril and had a listen to some old shows from years past.
Jeremy, are you sitting comfortably?
If you can sit comfortably on these, yeah.
What, hemorrhoids?
Yeah. No, I haven't really got them. I just said that for sympathy.
OK, a clip about football is next. You know that I'm going to love this and fully understand it. It's from 2002 and it features, well, it's the same old reprobates, Francis Ween, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy.
Francis, your tricky teaser, who's going to win the World Cup?
Well, this must be about the football. I mean, I don't need to tell you the result. I mean, for heaven's sake, the whole nation was watching it earlier this morning or... yesterday, if you're listening to the repeat. But it was a very exciting game, I think you can say.
Thank God for Michael Owen's groin, that's what I say.
Yes. And, you know, I think they deserved to win on the whole. I wasn't actually entirely surprised. I thought they were the better team on the day. But, you know, they've shown a lot of talent through the tournament. And... to say to this ridiculous question.
The thing whether what we don't know doing it as we are is whether there's going to be anybody listening to this at all, whether the entire nation will have cut its throat or will be out dancing in the street.
I just want the whole ghastly business to be over. The whole country's decked out like a loyalist estate at the moment.
Now, is the next question about next year's Grand National, because I've got a very hot tip for that.
See, this is what happens to us time and time again, isn't it? Having to predict what the news will have been.
Everything happens on a Thursday or a Friday daytime. Yeah. I know it's rubbish. All the elections, referenda or referendums, you decide.
Thank you.
We should record the show after it goes out. That's the only way forward.
Or, because we do an 8-week season, record all 8 programmes in the first week.
That would be easier. And just say, the war's not going so well.
Yeah. The Lib Dems less popular than we'd hoped.
Yeah. Something's been discovered.
Yeah, Ed Miliband surprises us with an adenoidal response.
Yeah, and they've found the missing dinosaur, a new planet.
Yeah.
And there's a survey that says cats are really fish.
Yeah.
They can edit that around, make a whole series out of it.
I think so.
Well, that's News Quiz Extra over for another week. As Sarah Brightman so beautifully warbled, time to say goodbye. But before we go, here's one last clipping from 2005, read by Harriet Cass.
Lost, young black and white female cat, approximately 1 year old. Not neutered, very nervous. Answers to the name Boo.
The News Quiz Extra was presented by Sandy Toksvig and featured Jeremy Hardy, Armando Iannucci, Will Smith, Bridget Christie and me, Charlotte Green. It was written by Benjamin Partridge and the producer was Lindsay Fenner.